Welcome to Cincy Reformed. I'm Pastor Brandon. Joined with Pastor Zach, we are pastors at Westside Reformed Church, a United Reformed congregation in Cincinnati, Ohio. And today we wanted to talk about Trinitarian heresies. I think it's important for us to reflect on some of the ancient heresies, because if we're not aware of some of the pitfalls that people in the past have fallen into, we might fall into them today. We might fall into them without knowing we're falling into them. We might be kind of thinking or espousing a view that's actually been heretical for hundreds of years, and maybe we just had no idea about it. So I thought we would kind of go back and forth and talk about different heresies and maybe some analogies that people have used. But Zach, why don't you kick us off? Tell us what modalism is. What is that?
Yeah, there was an ancient heresy called modalism, and it was trying to account for each of the persons being true God. However, it did not do so in a very helpful way, because it portrayed God as a God who goes through different phases, maybe wears different masks, was a way of speaking about it. So in one moment, he'd be the Father, he'd have his Father mask on, and the next moment, he's the Son, and he's acting like the Son, and the third, he's the Holy Spirit. But clearly within that context, you don't have three persons who are mutually related. However, you have instead only one who basically is like a schizophrenic God who changes from one to the next, very almost deceptively, I think you could say. Mm-hmm. So that is essentially modalism, going through different phases, going through different modes, but it's really reduced to a single God.
Yeah.
Brandon, how about you tell us about Arianism?
Arianism came from Arius, and he basically said that Jesus was not God. There was a time when Jesus was not. Jesus is the highest created being. He is of similar substance with the Father, but not of the same substance. So if in the whole Arius scheme of things, Jesus is and the Holy Spirit are not God. They're not equal with God. One of the texts that Arius would probably have pointed to is Colossians 1, where it speaks about Christ being the firstborn of creation. And so Arius would say, well, see, Christ is the firstborn, meaning he was created. And he's the highest being, but he's a created being. And not realizing that phrase that's used there in Colossians is actually also used in the Psalms, and it denotes a superior status. It wasn't saying that Jesus was somehow created or born in terms of his being as God in time or something like that. It's speaking about his superior status over creation. So that's one other heresy. Another heresy would be subordinationism. What is that, Zach?
Subordinationism, I think, is actually probably the one that's most prevalent in our day within Christian circles. That is a view that's very similar to Arianism here, where the Son is beneath the Father in terms of glory, dignity, authority. Oftentimes when people hear that language of Father and Son, they then begin to conceive that the Father is eternally in charge, and then the Son is eternally being bossed around by the Father, who's shaking his big finger at him and telling him what to do. However, the relation between Father and Son is really one about relation of origin, the origination of the Son. He's begotten of the Father eternally. That Father-Son language refers to that. It does not refer to authority and submission eternally. So I think that this idea of subordinationism, where the Father is more in charge, the Father is more sovereign, and the Son is eternally being bossed around, likewise the Holy Spirit as well.
And often what people do is they latch on to a phrase where Paul will speak about how the Father is the head of Christ.
That's right.
And or yeah. It'll speak about Jesus telling the Father, your will be done, not mm-hmm. my will. And what they're doing is they're taking something that was unique in terms of redemptive history,
right,
as the Son took on flesh to be obedient unto death. That was a specific task that the second Adam, the second person of the Trinity, took on flesh to become second Adam, to fulfill what the first Adam failed to do. And in that mission, he, of course, he submitted himself to the covenant of works. He submitted himself. He was led by the Spirit, so on and so forth. So we don't want to take that and then somehow read it back into, into the Trinity in eternity and saying, well, if this is what the mission of Jesus looked like, then that must be what it looks like in eternity past, and that's just not the case.
Exactly. Part of the surprise of the gospel is that the Son became obedient, as Philippians 2 says. He became obedient to the point of death. He wasn't eternally getting bossed around. And also, as Hebrews says, he learned obedience, which means that this is not an eternal thing. This is what the Son voluntarily did in time for the sake of redemption. Like you said, you cannot read that back into the eternal relation. That is instead something that he did as Messiah for the sake of our redemption. Brandon, we talk about three persons in the Godhead, but we don't want to go too far. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us about the heresy of tritheism?
Yeah, so tritheism is when you just basically treat Father, Son, Holy Spirit as just three separate gods. So you kind of lose the unity of one God, you lose monotheism, and now you're a tritheist. You know, Father's God, Holy Spirit's God, Son's God, and they're not united in terms of essence or anything like that. So that would be another problem. And Zach, maybe you can round us off by talking about kind of partialism, this idea that you can kind of parse out or split the Trinity.
Yeah, many people will believe that it's that the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit are not each of them in their person fully and truly God. And so it's only the combination of the three that makes up then the fullness of God. And I think this can be somewhat related to how some of the tritheist arguments can be, where they conceive of the three needing to, that they're each God separately, then they kind of come together and they form like a unity together. I think that this, it can sort of be a similar problem that can occur when the three are separated from each other, and that the one essence, the one substance that they all share is not being affirmed. You can end up either with the tritheist, like you mentioned, or you can end up with a partialist, where the persons are not each fully God in and of themselves. So that's enough of the heresies. How about we talk about some of the analogies that are oftentimes used?
Yeah.
We just want to say up front, we do not encourage analogies. We're going to discuss them for the sake of refuting them. So please don't try this at home, kids. So let's begin. Brad, can you tell us about the water analogy that's oftentimes used?
Yeah, so some people will try to describe the Trinity, and they'll say, well, the Trinity is like, you know, water. Water can be liquid. If it's frozen, it can be a solid. If it's heated up, it can turn into a gas. And it can have, you know, three different forms, but yet it's all water. And so they would say, well, that kind of maps on to the Holy Trinity, and it's a good analogy for us to understand what God is like. But that's problematic, because that actually resembles more of a modalistic idea of God. A God who's one God, but just wears three different hats, three different uniforms, you know, three different modes or roles that he just kind of presents. And so, the gas, the water, the solid are not, you know, distinct persons, but they're actually one in three modes. And so, yeah, not a helpful analogy. It actually paints more or maps on better to a heresy rather than to the actual biblical doctrine of the Holy Trinity. But Zach, what about the sun analogy?
Yeah, the sun has been used to recognize, if you think about the sun that's shining up in the sky, there is the sun itself that's burning, there's the light that's given off, and then there's the heat that is then felt. Then that becomes used then to speak about the Father as being the Son, the S-U-N, Son, the Son then being the light that's radiated out, then the Holy Spirit that brings that warmth, that heat that results from that. However, with that, I think that again we fall into a real danger of heresy. I think that the Arian heresy seems to be right there, because clearly the sun is the S-U-N, sun, is the thing in charge, the and higher up than the light and the heat, and that the three are not sharing the same substance, but rather there's a hierarchy that's being suggested by that sun analogy. For another one, how about we talk about that old favorite at St. Patrick's Day time? How about the three-leaf clover, Brandon? Is that a good one for the Trinity?
No, I mean, it's pretty pervasive. I mean, that's one of the go-to analogies when you're trying to have your Sunday school on the Trinity. Everybody brings in three-leaf clovers, and they say, this is God, you know, one clover, three leaves, there you go. But that would be partialism. That is not a good idea. The three-leaf clover analogy is teaching that God is one-third Father, one-third Son, one-third Holy Spirit. In order for the three-leaf clover to work, each leaf would have to be fully clover. And I just can't even conceive of that with my mind. It just breaks down. It doesn't. It teaches one-third, 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 rather than each person being fully, completely subsisting as God. And I think that would be missing in the three-leaf clover. But Zach, what about the candle one? I mean, that's a popular one.
Yeah. There's a candle, and I also think there's another one that's just the same as the egg analogy.
Yep.
Where the candle, you've got the wax, you got the wick, and you got the flame. And with the egg analogy, you have the shell, you have the egg white, and you have the egg yolk. And he goes, oh, well, that's just like the Trinity. Like, no, it's not. That's called, again, like you said, partialism, where the three things, the shell is not the entire egg. The white is not the egg. The yolk is not the egg. Neither is the wax the candle, the wick the candle, the flame the candle. Mm-hmm. These are added up to become a candle. So again, it's that heresy of partialism. How about then, you know, some have said Peter, James, and John, or three people. The Trinity is really three people.
Yeah. Or, and you even hear like different analogies used. So, you know, there's times where there's one job that maybe requires three different people. So, for example, when I was in the Navy, I was a diver, and a diver has two people tending him. And so when they call for the diver, three people show up. They only call for one, but it's three. And some people will use analogies like that about you know, three different people. But again, that's just tritheism. That's way too much of a separation. The three people are not, you know, one or anything like that. So again, these analogies that people are trying to use, they're trying to explain the Trinity, maybe to a child, maybe to a new convert. He's wondering, okay, what is this God that we now love, and what's this God that I now believe in? And you're trying to explain the Holy Trinity, and people have tried to use analogies, especially like in preaching, because in preaching we like to use stories and analogies and try to break things down. But at the same time, the Trinity does not map on to any human analogy. It transcends human analogies. And whenever we try to use a human analogy, the analogy is not of the biblical Trinity. The analogy is of an ancient heresy. And so it's problematic when every single analogy that we have represents an ancient heresy and not the biblical doctrine of the Holy Trinity. So, Zach, what are, I guess, the three big pillars, you know, as we're teaching very basically on the Trinity, you know, we're teaching a child, we're teaching a new convert, there's three big pillars that have to be there at least. What are they?
Sure. The first is to affirm that there is one God. And when we speak about there being one God, what we are referring to is that there is one divine essence, there's one divine nature, one divine substance. This is language that is really synonymous, different words that are used. Being, essence, substance, nature. There's one single, not in kind, but there's just one in existence. And so that is the first affirmation, there's one God. And we're referring there to the divine being or the divine essence. The second pillar that we would affirm is that there are three persons subsisting in that one single essence. They are three distinct persons that are eternal persons. These are not phases or modes. These are three distinct persons that each subsist in that one divine essence. And we refer to the Father being the first in eternal order, the Son being begotten of the Father alone, and he is the second in the eternal order. He's eternally begotten. The Spirit being the third of the divine persons, and he proceeds from the Father and the Son. So you have these three persons who are distinguished by what I was just describing in those relations of origin. The Father begetting, the Son being begotten eternally, the Father and Son breathing forth, and the Spirit being breathed forth eternally. And that those three persons subsist in the one divine essence. And so that's the second pillar, is that there are three distinct persons. The third pillar then is that we affirm that each of those persons is true God. And the Father, Son, and Spirit each partake of and subsist in that one divine essence. And so the Father does not have more of the essence, if you could possibly have that, than the Son or the Spirit. The Father is not more sovereign than the Son and the Spirit. They all partake of the exact same deity, the exact same divine being. They subsist in that as that divine being. And so the three pillars are: there's one God, there are three persons, and each of those three persons is truly God. Anything you might say to clarify that?
No, I think that's really helpful. You know, when I was teaching the Trinity to my kids, you know, that's kind of what I just kept coming back to. One God, three persons, each person fully God. And you know, sometimes children push back. Well, what does that look like? How do I make sense of that? And you know, they would like an analogy or a picture or something. And that's it. I mean, it transcends, and it leads us to worship. It doesn't lead us to get frustrated and leave. It leads us into worship this triune God. It's also a big deal when you're interacting with Muslims. That's often one of the places that they want to go to, because they don't believe that we are monotheists. And so whenever I've been interacting with Muslims and evangelizing Muslims, they've usually brought the conversation at some point to the Trinity, because it doesn't make sense to them. But just being able to say, you know, there's only one God, one essence, one usia, one substance, and there's three persons, three hypostases, three subsistences, and each person is fully God, subsisting as God, without remainder. The Father's God without remainder, the Son's God without remainder, the Holy Spirit's God without remainder. And going back to the Athanasian Creed. I think the Athanasian Creed is a great creed to read to children, to new converts. It sets up, I think, helpful boundaries for us as we read the creed. It's you could say the most orthodox thing you could read on the Holy Trinity, in terms of giving us a great boundary in which we can think about the Holy Trinity. And you know, in whenever I've taught on the Holy Trinity, if I've taught a Bible study or a small group on it, usually, you know, as questions are coming and as we're trying to unpack the biblical data of the Trinity, it's hard. It stretches our minds. It's hard to understand, and you can see people starting to get frustrated. And I usually end my session by quoting Gregory of Nazianzus. I think he ends in a way that resonates well with most people. And here's what Gregory of Nazianzus said. He's one of the church fathers. He said, "No sooner do I conceive of the one than I am illumined by the splendor of the three. No sooner do I distinguish them than I am carried back to the one. When I contemplate the three together, I see but one torch and cannot divide or measure out the undivided light." And so I just kind of love that. He says, you know, and speaking more devotionally, you know, and as I think of the one, my mind's carried to the three. And as I think of the three, my mind's carried back to the one. And there's a simplicity there from a devotional standpoint, I think, that people resonate with and find helpful. Anything else there?
No, I think that that's, I'm glad that you brought that to a close back to that idea of worship, because when people do try to grapple with this doctrine, it can be frustrating unless you realize that you're supposed to be somewhat frustrated by it, because you're being brought to the brink of mystery, that infinite gulf between the creator and the creature. And if we're not brought to that moment of saying, I cannot comprehend you, Lord, then your worship is lacking. The analogies we've used and mentioned to criticize thus far, like the three-leaf clover, for example, that is not conducive to humbling us and to bring us to the brink of mystery and to contemplate and to worship the God who transcends us. However, when we get to this doctrine of the Trinity and it starts stretching us and it brings us to the point where we say, okay, I'm tapping out now, I can't go any further, then that's the point where we just simply worship the Lord and give thanks for that he revealed himself to us so we can apprehend something even though we cannot comprehend everything. Right. So I appreciate you finishing that place. Thanks. Well, we hope it's been helpful for you as well, and we hope that it encourages you to worship the one God who is Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. We invite you to worship with us on the Lord's Day at 10 a.m. in the West Side. We are sponsored by West Side Reformed Church, and until next time, we are the Cincy Reformed Podcast. Thanks so much for joining us today.